Good evening. I think this is the last lecture on this during this study group, and I'm going to talk on the text of Tenzo Kyokun, that is a part of this book. But the last two lectures, I basically talk on this article by Uchiyama Roshi about the life or the self. Does everyone has this handout? Is there extra copies?
They're upstairs. Does anybody need one?
They don't have. And we talked about Uchiyama Roshi's teaching or thought about the transformation of our life from a self-centered way of life in our usual world that is chasing after something we want or usually people think are positive and escape from something we don't want, or usually in our system of value that is not positive. And he said this way of life based on discrimination and chasing after something and escaping from something is based on illusion. And the illusion is caused by our ability to think something which is not true or real. And we, as a human beings, we have to live using this, you know, ability to create something which is not real. That is delusion. And basically, what he said is we need to transform our way of life from diagram 4 to 6. The real reality is we are one with all beings within this entire world. And this world is born with us and living together with us and dying with us. So, what in this theory, what Uchiyama Roshi is saying is to transform our way of life from diagram 4 to diagram 6. I think that is what I discussed last week, or last 2 weeks. And I'd like to continue to talk on this point a little bit, and I'd like to start to talk on the Dogen's text of Tenzo Kyokun. I mean, about, you know, this transformation from diagram 4 to diagram 6 in this book, page 40, at the bottom of page 43, he said as follows. Our discussion has evolved a long way from the ordinary, dualistic way of seeing ourselves and our lives. So he showed a non-dualistic way of viewing things and viewing ourselves. However, without going through this evolution, it would be impossible to comprehend any discussion on the Buddha Dharma or the Tenzo Kyokun. If we don't really understand this transformation, we cannot really understand what Dogen is saying in Tenzo Kyokun. And my understanding is what Dogen Zenji and also Uchiyama Roshi is trying to teach us is how we can live in our daily lives as Jijyu Zammai. That is the same as our Zazen practice, how we can transform our not only in Zazen, in our Zendo, but also our day-to-day lives outside Zendo, how we can live as a Jijyu Zammai. And that has something to do with the structure of our life. That is what Ujam Roshi have been discussing using this cartoon. And when we change over from seeing our lives in the usual way toward viewing everything from the perspective of the Buddha Dharma, the significance of our daily activities is inevitably changes as well. So when we transform the way we see ourselves and our lives and the world, we can see the meaning or significance of our action we do in our daily lives also have to be changed. So this transformation is important, and this transformation is in the teaching of the Four Noble Truths. You know, suffering and the cause of suffering is desire or thirst, and desire is based on illusion or ignorance. This is cause, and this is result. And third, this is first, this is second. And the third noble truth is cessation of suffering, and that is caused by, you know, our practice of Eightfold Noble Path or Correct Path. So this is another cause and result. So what Buddha taught and what Ujam Roshi is teaching here is how we can transform our way of life from this set of cause and effect to this set of cause and effect. That is, I think, what Ujam Roshi is discussing here. And this word, when Ujam Roshi said, when we change over from seeing our views in the usual way, this change is translation of Japanese expression tenkan. I don't like the word here, change. This is more like a transformation, I think. And this ten is used in the expression as a ten, same ten, and a or ten ne. That is the expression used in the Yogacara teaching I discussed last week. The transform the foundation of our life from the karmic consciousness to the Buddha's wisdom. This transformation is called Tenne in Yogacara school, please.
In the Lakavatara, they talk about the transformation at the base of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the same
idea? Yeah. Lankavastara is based on Yogacara teaching, or Yogacara teaching, one of the sources of Yogacara teaching is that sutra. So this English word change doesn't have, you know, deep meaning, but if we understand, you know, what the meaning, the word expression which Ujam Roshi uses, this is important Buddhist term to transform our life from based on, you know, the karmic consciousness as a function of the, you know, eight consciousnesses, and usually our eight consciousnesses are controlled by our the seventh, the ego consciousness. And ego consciousness grasps the Araya consciousness as me and try to control the first six consciousnesses. That is our usual psychological mind. That's why our life becomes distorted. That is basically what the Yogacara teaching says. And when we transform the foundation of our life, the same eight consciousness start to work in a different way as a Buddha's wisdom. And this transformation is a process, this transformation, same transformation, is a process of our practice. That is a basic structure of, I think, all Buddhist teachings. At least, you know, that teaching is based on Four Noble Truths. And this teaching, you know, this transformation from diagram four, the way of life, showed in diagram four to diagram six, it was very attractive to me, you know, when I read, you know, these books written by Uchiyamuroshi. As I said, this was written in 1970. That was the time, I wanted to become his disciple. I was looking for the way to live because I couldn't find any meanings to live. And at that time, when I was a high school student, entire Japanese society seems like one big, huge money-making machine. And as a high school student, I felt, you know, high school was a factory to produce the part of this big machine. And depending upon, you know, how much we work and how and whether we when go to a good university or not, we became a good part of that machine or, you know, low part of that machine. And whether low or high the position might be, you know, when we are not useful, we are just replaced with other, you know, parts. And I didn't find any meanings to live in that way of life. And to me, that way of life, you know, at least in Japanese society, more than 30 years ago, was exactly, you know, like Uchiyamuroshi, you know, described. And I wanted to escape from this, you know, kind of society. That's why I wanted to become his disciple. So to escape from this, you know, kind of world, competitive world, to which we have to fight or compete with others, and, you know, how high within this money-making machine is a purpose of our life, and we judge our life whether successful or not, depend upon how high we can go within this hierarchy, or, you know, what's the word, social climbing. And I couldn't find any meaning to live in that way. So I wanted to drop out or escape. And, you know, and yet I couldn't find any, you know, concrete way of life when I left, drop out that machine. And this was the teaching I was looking for. And not only the teaching, you know, there might be a same kind of teaching, but I couldn't find any kind of living concrete example. But Uchiyamuroshi was the person who really lived in this attitude. So that was why I think I was sucked into this way of life. Even though I knew nothing about Zen or Buddhism, So to me, you know, this transformation, this teaching of transformation is really important and very attractive. But later this became a problem. And, you know, I said, last week I said, there's something lacking in this, you know, description. That is what I'd like to discuss later in this series of, you know, lecture. But I'd like to briefly mention what was the problem. And the problem is, you know, I said that transformation from diagram 4 to 6 is a transformation from this cause and result to cause and result as a truth, no. Third noble truth to four noble truths, this transformation. But the problem is, this means this is no good, this is good. That's why I want to escape and I want to live in this way. That is a problem. Isn't this another kind of a set of, you know, I don't like this, I like this. I hope I want to live in this way, I hate to live that way. So, what is the difference between, you know, I want to transform my life from this to this, and I want to gain, you know, wealth and fame? What is the difference within, as an actual happening in our mind, something I don't have, or something that is lacking now. So I want to change my way of life. What is the difference between, you know, this cause and result and this cause and result? And often, it's very difficult to attain, you know, cessation of suffering. Therefore, we suffer. I know. I want to reach the stage of cessation of suffering, but I cannot. Then, this, you know, awareness of gap between who I am and who I want to be creates suffering. Right. So, what is the difference between this way of life and this way of life, basically, fundamentally? That was the question I had to, you know, face after several years of practice. And so that is one point. If we, you know, try to escape from diagram 4 and reach to diagram 6, this is still, you know, escaping from something and chasing after something. And another point, which is not explained in this theory, is Buddhist teaching, and here Uchamuroshi is saying that our ability of thinking is a cause of problem. Then what is the meaning or significance of Buddha's teaching and all the Buddhist masters' teaching, and including Dogen and Uchamuroshi himself? What are they doing using, you know, words and concept? That is another point that is not mentioned in this theory. That means, I think when he wrote this article, he was thinking. But what this thinking, or when Buddha taught, Buddha was thinking, and when Dogen wrote, Dogen was thinking, what this thinking fit in within these diagrams? if thinking is simply the cause of suffering or problems or illusion, what are, you know, the function of Buddha's thinking or other, you know, Buddhist master thinking? And why we want to read this kind of thing, writing that is a result of those people's thinking? If so, there must be some, you know, positive meaning of thinking. And what is that? And maybe third point is, this is what I've faced, that, you know, after 10 years of practice, first 5 years I practiced at Antaiji with Uchama Roshi, and second 5 years I practiced at Vale Zendo in Massachusetts, and I felt while I was there, probably I talked before, one time I went to New York City to have a session at there was a small Zen center near from the Central Park, and we had a 5-day session at Vale Zendo, and I went to New York to do a weekend session. At the time, we received $20 a month, and the transportation by bus cost, I think, $15 or so. So I only had $5 extra, and I had to, you know, eat lunch after the session. Before returning to Vale Zendo, I had extra time, so I had extra free time. So I took a walk in the city, and I went to the place where I could see the Statue of Liberty, and I spent that $5. So I had completely no money, only the ticket, the bus ticket. And at the time, I didn't have a driving license. I didn't have passport. So I had really nothing. And I, at that time, I felt, you know, I was really liberated. I am nothing. I have really nothing. And I am nothing. And I thought, when I was hit by a car on the street at that time, no one could find who I am. So I felt I'm really nothing, and I felt really happy about that. And I felt that my escape from that this society is completed. So I was really felt really liberated. And at the time, I felt like I don't need to escape anymore. Since that time, I tried to little by little return to the world. So I felt I didn't need to escape anymore, but I also think I couldn't escape anymore. There's no place to escape. Then I returned to the world. Shortly after that experience, I had to return to Japan because my body was half broken. And I found that, you know, because of my physical condition, I couldn't practice in the way I did last 10 years. Since then, you know, I stopped escaping from the world. I tried to work in the world, not to live in this way, but I'd like to bring Dharma in this world. What is this? I think this is a Bodhisattva practice, to practice with people in the six realms of samsara. That is, you know, the meaning of the first vow of the four Bodhisattva vows. That is, sentient beings are numberless, we vow to save them. As I often said, this vow means I don't enter nirvana until all other beings enter there. So this vow means I am the last person. I will be the last person to enter nirvana. That means I have to work, or as a bodhisattva, we have to work in this world. And I think in this world is a world of, you know, this diagram four. So how our work as a bodhisattva within this stage of competitive world, how can put that practice within, you know, this theory? That is, I think, 3 points, which is, this theory is not complete. That was what I, what are the three? Oh, one is if I want to escape from this and reach there, isn't this another, you know, like and dislike? And second is, what is the meaning or significance of Buddha's and other masters' teachings using words and concept, if words and concept is source of problem? So it seems there is an opposite function, opposite way we can use words and concept, in the way, you know, that is helpful for other people to awake to the reality beyond words and concept, using word and concept. But that usage of word and concept fit in this, you know, diagrams. And fourth is, what is the bodhisattva practice within this stage of, you know, competitive world? What is the meaning? And how can that practice fit in this, in these diagrams? I think those are three things that is lacking in this understanding, I think. And, you know, so in the beginning, you know, this idea, we have to, you know, leave, you know, this competitive world and practice and leave the universal self was really attractive to me, and I really devoted to that way of life or that practice. But when I returned to the world, you know, how, you know, I also have to use our thinking. My own thinking. What is this thinking? You know, my thinking is not like Buddha's or enlightened, you know, Buddhist master's way of thinking completely. I have been studying, but still most part of my thinking is not so different. Like, I like this, I want this, I think this is important, I think this is valuable, I think this is not valuable, so I have to avoid this and choose this. You know, what is this kind of thinking, discrimination or distinction and making choice? What is the meaning of this thing we have to do? So those are those 3 points. Please use something you feel comfortable. Is there a meditation bench or something? Or even if you can use chair. I think those are the points we want to study in order to continue, you know, Uchiyamuroshi's thinking and make even a little bit improvement. How to make his teaching a little more, not perfect or complete, but closer to the reality. So please keep those 3 points in mind when we study this Tenzo Kyokun. Okay, I think I'm ready to start to talk on the text itself. This Tenzo Kyokun, or instruction to the Tenzo. Tenzo is a name of the office or position in the Zen monastery. And this Tenzo Kyokun is a part of this book, is translation of Dogen Zenji's Eihei Shingi. Eihei is the name of Dogen's monastery, and Shingi Shin and Gi. Shin is pure or purity, and Gi is regulation. We translate this key as standard. Another possible English might be rules, regulations, standards. And this pure or purity refer to or came from the expression shōjō. Dai Kai Shu Shou Jo Dai Kai Shu. This refer to the practitioners in the Sangha. Shōjō, shō and jō, both means pure or without defilement. And dai is great. Kai is ocean. And shū is assembly or community. And that is a translation of sangha. Probably, as you know, Sangha is called is like an ocean. That means ocean does not reject any water from all different kind of rivers, and the water from different rivers, once the water enter the ocean, you know, there's no such distinction, but only one ocean. So once people from different kind of background or social status or races or cultures, once they enter Buddhist Sangha, there's no such distinctions. That is the idea of Sangha. So there's no discrimination depending upon where they are from. They are only kind of a order in Buddhist Sangha from the time of Shakyamuni was how long they were as after they are entering the Sangha. That is the only kind of a hierarchy. Otherwise, and that is a problem in Japanese Buddhism now. But this hierarchy is too big, too strong. And, you know, I think many American or European people don't like, you know, this kind of strict, you know, vertical system in Buddhist society in Japan. But I think that is too kind of one extreme, please.
I missed what you said, or the connection with the Buddhist Sangha, and so I'm not clear what you're talking about now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
I said in original Buddhist Sangha, there's no such distinction or hierarchy depending upon the social background before they became the member of the Sangha. Only the, how can I say, what is the word?
Seniority.
Seniority is only, standard of making that order. And what I said about, you know, today's Japanese monastic system is that order of seniority is too strong. Anyway, that has nothing to do with what I'm talking here. So, Buddhist Sangha or monastery or assembly is called Shōjō Daikaishū, Pure Great Ocean Assembly. And Shingi means the regulation or standard or rules of this pure great ocean assembly. That's why, you know, this word Shing or pure, purity, came from. Okay, so far. Okay, and I'd like to briefly talk about the history of this set of regulations called Shingi. In Chinese Buddhism or Chinese Zen Buddhism, you know, the set of the regulations for Buddhist monks are called Vinaya. And Vinaya is a collection of precepts, and it's usually have 250 precepts for male monk and more than 300 or so for women monk, female monks. And this was set in India. And in order to become a Buddhist monk, become a member of the Sangha, people have to receive those precepts. And there is another set of precepts named Bodhisattva precept. That is the precept we receive, Bodhisattva precept. This is called Kai in Japanese. And Vinaya is called Ritsu. And together we call this precept as Kai Ritsu. And Bodhisattva precept are mentioned in a few Mahayana sutras, and the most important one is the sutra of Indra's net, or Bomokyo. And another is a sutra of jewel necklace, or Yorakukyo. And another, a few more sutras or Mahayana scriptures. And these are made in India. But Shingi is another set of regulation for Buddhist monastic practice, particularly in Chinese Zen. And Chinese Zen monastic Zen practice is based on Shingi, even though all Chinese Buddhist monks, including Zen monks, receive all of them, both Vinaya and Mahayana or Bodhisattva precept. They receive both Vinaya and Mahayana precept, and yet Their monastic practice is regulated with this set of regulations. And it is said, traditionally it is said, the first Shingi was compiled or made by Zen Master Hyakujo. His name is Hyakujo Ekai. Or in Chinese pronunciation, Baijun. Hui. Hai. This person lived 749 to 814, so second half of 8th century and first beginning of 9th century. This, you know, second half of 8th and first half of 9th century is called a golden age of Zen. And Hyakujo was a disciple of Baso, or Baso, or Mazu. You know, Baso had many disciples who became very important and famous as the masters, such as Nansen, the person who cut the cat, and many others. And it said Hyakujo was a person who made first Shingi and named Hyakujo Shingi, was considered to be the oldest Shingi. But modern scholars, because they are skeptical about everything, doubt whether if Hyakujo really made the first Shingi or not, and probably not. And the second oldest Shingi is Zennen Shingi. Zen is Zen, and N means garden. So the pure regulation of Zen garden means Zen monastery. Same idea of Zen forest. Mm-hmm. And this was compiled by the master whose name was Choro Sōsaku in Japanese pronunciation, or Chang Ru Zong Ze. And this singi was made or published 1103, so about almost 300 years after Hyakujō. And this is the oldest existing singi we can see. And Dōgen Zenji often quote in his own singi. So Zennen Shingi is a most important Chinese singi when we study Dōgen's Shingi. And this book is an English translation of this Zennen Shingi. So if you are interested in Chinese regulations, I'm not so much interested in reading this, but if you are interested in, maybe this is a...
And they're comparative to Dōgen?
Not comparative, but in the introduction, this person, this is translated by Chinese woman, woman monk, and also a scholar, whose name is Ifa. You know, there is a big Chinese Buddhist temple west side outside of Los Angeles, Shirai Temple. I think this person, Ifa, is a teacher at that Chinese temple. And in the introduction of this book, she described the history of Chinese Vinaya and Shingi and other monastic regulations in other schools. So if you are interested in that aspect of Chinese Buddhist history, this might be interesting. Anyway, as a monastic regulation in Zen, there's several kind of important features. Traditionally, you know, Zen monks thought regarding, you know, Hyakujō's Shingi. Hyakujō Shingi doesn't exist, but there's some kind of a description. What is the important point of Hyakujō's monastic practice? In two Chinese texts, and according to that description, there are several important points that is different from Buddhist monastic practice from India or from other Chinese Buddhist traditions. And those first of all, it said at Hyakujō's monastery, they don't have Buddha hall. They don't have Buddha hall. They only have Dharma hall. Buddha hall and, of course, Dharma hall and Sangha hall. Sangha hall is where monks stay, sleep, practice, and eat. And Dharma hall is where the abbot of the monastery give discourses. And Buddha Hall is, of course, the hall in which Buddha is enshrined, and monks do ceremonies, services. But it said they didn't have Buddha Hall. That means they don't think Buddha Hall is necessary. And the reason was, you know, that the abode of the monastery is a dharmaya of this tradition. So that means the abbot has transmitted the Buddha's mind. So we don't need Buddha Hall. The abbot is Buddha. In behalf of the Buddha, abbot give Dharma teaching. So they thought they don't need doing service to Buddha. So their main practice is done at Sangha Hall, that means meditation, and at also Dharma Hall, that is listening to about discourses and had some conversation. And many of the Zen text or literature is a record of what the abbot said at the Dharma Hall and what student asked or inquired the meaning of the teaching, or the teacher asked his student if they really understood or not. You know, this actual, you know, conversation between teacher and monks is the way they study and also express the Dharma, instead of, you know, reading books. All those in the early stage of Zen, you know, all those monks who came to Zen were kind of became tired of studying text. So they throw the text away and wanted to actually practice what they studied, what is written in the text. Actually, they wanted to experience that. That is the kind of a characteristic of Zen teaching. Don't read and think and understand, but do it. Actually practice in the Sangha Hall and study Dharma from a living Buddha, living example of Dharma. And another important point is community work. Called Samu. Or another name is Hushin. Samu is this kanji. Bosa and Mu means to do something. Sa is to make something, and Mu is to work diligently. So Samu is working, and Hushin is this kanji. Hu and Shin. Hu means what is Hu? Universal. And Shin means invitation. That means when there's certain community work, all people are invited and have to come, including the abbot. That is what Fushin means, and this word Fushin is still used in modern Japanese, that as a community work or a certain, you know, big construction is called Fushin. Because in Japanese villages, from Zen tradition, I think, for some big project in a village. All village people, member of the village, came to work together, such as making or constructing a road, or planting trees on the mountains, or when some family need to build a new house, all people from all family came and helped work. That is still called Fushin. That Japanese usage came from Chinese Shingi, or Chinese spirit of Zen practice. Anyway, it said, if the abbot does not come to work together with all other members of Sangha, it is said the jisha, the attendant of the abbot, was punished. Not the abbot, but the jisha, please.
Also, I think one of the stories of Baijiang is the a day without food.
No work, no food, yes.
No work, no food.
That came from this kind of practice, this style of practice. Do you know the story of no work, no food? Well, when Hyakujo became very old, still he liked, you know, working with young monks. But young monks felt, you know, he's too old to work with them. So, and they want their abbot to take a rest. But even he asked the abbot not to work, abbot rejected and came to work continuously. So one day, the monks hide his tool to work. So when Hyakujo came, he couldn't find, you know, his tool. So he found he was rejected by monks. So he went back to the abbot quarter. And on that day, when the work is done and the time of meal, probably lunch, even though the sign, the probably kulapa, is made, but the abbot didn't come to eat. So the monk went to the abbot quarter and asked, "Why don't you come?" And Hyakujo said that a day of no work is a day of no eat. That is a very famous story about this person, Hyakujo. And this is very important spirit of Zen practice, because it really radically different from the practice or regulations in Vinaya. In Indian Vinaya, working is prohibited, especially farming. That was what Hyakujo and his assembly did. Not only Hyakujo, but all other Chinese Zen monasteries, it said they started to do farming, to start to produce their own food to support their practice. It was prohibited, the work is prohibited in Vinaya, because in the process of farming, you know, they have to kill small living beings. That is one of the characteristics of Zen monastic practice. Working is an important part of practice. And another one is they didn't have a Buddha hall. They only had Dharma hall and conversation, question and answer between abbot, teacher, and student is important way of studying Dharma instead of, you know, reading text.
Other important point, in order to do community work, they had some temple officers. It said they had 10 departments, and 10 departments, and they had a chief in each of the 10 departments. So there's a kind of a monastic or community system to do all different kind of work within the monastery. And another, one more important characteristic in Hyakujoju Shingi, it changed later, is that they had no special schedule for Zazen. That means monks can accept the time of Dharma discourse and time of community work, whether monks want to sit or take a rest is up to the monk. There's no fixed schedule beside teaching and community work. That means if monk they want to sit, they could sit rest of the day. And if they want to do something else, they also could do that thing. So it's kind of a liberal community that is different from in Zenden Shingi. It's already different. Everything is scheduled. Especially after Keizan Shingi, you know, all the necessary event or daily routines are fixed, and all monks have to participate all those practice events. So that difference.
Would they still have a bell and a certain schedule, or is it just people go and sit and stop when they want?
Well, we don't have concrete, you know, information about how they, you know, manage the practice. But you know, in the monks' hall, you know, all monks, you know, share the space, and they sat together. That is sat together in a monks' hall is another difference from Vinaya or Indian Buddhism. In Indian monastery, you know, monks, each monk had their own hermitage, and they practice meditation individually. They don't sit together with teacher, with assembly. So meditation practice is kind of private than in hermitage. But here at Hyakujo's monastery, they live in one big hall and share 24 hours. I'm not sure at Hyakujo's time they have other buildings, but Zenden Shingi is almost 300 years later. They had many other buildings, and there's a building for monks to rest and study. It's not mentioned how, you know, they spend time rest of the day. So we are not sure. So I don't know how did they make arrangement if they don't want to sit. Please.
Things that I'm wondering about the progression of. One of them is the not studying, but, you know, the conversations, the interaction with the abbot as Buddha. It seems like that has changed considerably.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is seems like I had heard that Kazan, like one of the things he did was he made it really work, fit into Japanese culture,
mm-hmm.
and that he mentioned he scheduled everything. But whoever said that also said, you know, the American mind is probably more like the Indian mind psychologically. I don't know what my question is about that one.
So Americans don't like Zen monastic life.
we more kind of individual
practice.
Well, I'm wondering. I mean, that's a long question. It's a big question.
Yes, it's really a big question.
But because when we're on our own, how much do we just goof off? But anyway,
it's an interesting situation because American Zen seems to be based on the monastic practice. But what I'm finding is that many people who have left Zen have gone to Advaita, which is much more of a direct opening of awareness, which your description of the unstructured the environment is much more like the teachings of Advaita, where there's a conversation that's happening with the teacher back and forth. And that's very interesting. And as you mentioned, the American mindset might be more appropriately that way. But it's an interesting thing because I know a number of Zen practitioners, long-time Zen practitioners, who have gone to Advaita because of the directness.
Oh, that's interesting.
Could you spell that? I never heard
Advaita.
Like Advaita Vedanta?
Yeah.
It means non-dual Vedanta. It's kind of a Hindu school.
But, you know, it's interesting. In American monastery, they have each person has an individual room. They don't, I think, only, no, not even at Shastave, they don't sleep in the zendo, in the sodo. They have their own cell. So they don't really sleep together. So that is the difference between American Zen monastery and Chinese or Japanese traditional monastery. Do you have something to say?
I think beginners at San Francisco Zen Center, there's a big dorm room. But that's for people who are probably close to the early practice. Or
two or three or maybe six at the outside is what I've seen. There would be a few three rooms.
They sleep in the zendo?
No. It's really rare to sleep in the zendo at Green Gulch. I was there a while before I found out that they even had the option of sleeping in the zendo. At Tassajara, I don't think they allow it.
There's no space to sleep in that platform in Tassajara. It's a narrow platform.
Yeah.
One person sleeps in there.
Really?
Yeah, right.
They call him the Jinkido, the person who locks the...
as a duty.
Mm-hmm. They're supposed to.
Well, those are kind of characteristics or features of Zen monastic practice in China, early Chinese Zen. And after, you know, Zen Nenshin, it became more like an establishment that is from Song Dynasty that start 10th century, thus Zen school, Zen monastery became a kind of establishment, Buddhist establishment, and supported by the government, emperors and aristocrats, and many of the monasteries become really big institution. And that's why I think they need this size of regulations. And so this Zenden Shingi was made 1103 because Dogen was born 1200, so about 100 before Dogen was born. So when Dogen visited China, I think many of the Chinese monastic practice is following this Zenden Shingi. That's why Dogen in his Ehe Shingi, he quotes Zenden Shingi. And this, so Ehe Shingi was written about 100 after Zenden Shingi. So this Dogen's Shingi is one of the oldest Shingi we can read or study today. There are a few more Chinese Shingi before or around the same time of Dogen, and there are many after Dogen. But Dogen's Ehe Shingi is also unique. If Ehe Shingi has six sections or six independent writings, and the first is Tenzo Kyokun, that is the text we are going to study. And five others are the description of how to use orioki, how to eat in the zendo. And the third is bendoho, how to practice in the monk's hall throughout the day. And the fourth is the regulations in the study hall, or shuryo shingi. And the fifth is kind of a regulations when beginners meet with experienced practitioners called acharya, who have been practiced more than 5 years. And final six is Chiji Shingi, that is not a regulation or standard for temple officers. And all those six were written independently, and Tenzo Kyokun was the first writing within Ehe Shingi. And this text, Ehe Shingi, was not made by Dogen himself, but this was these six independent writings was made together as one text or one book named Ehe Shingi in 17th century, so almost 400 after Dogen's death. So Dogen himself didn't know there's such a text called Ehe Shingi exist. And this Tenzo Kyokun is, of course, Dogen wrote to teach, to give instruction to the person who works in the kitchen. And this is written 1236, I think. I'm sorry, 37. Because he was born 1200, he was 37 years old. And this was the time right after he founded his own first monastery named Koshoji in 1233, so 4 years after he founded his own monastery. So his sangha, or his sangha is still very new. And he wrote first of all other, you know, regulations or standards, how to cook, how to practice in the kitchen. I think because, you know, cooking is very important part of not only monastic practice, but in any human life. And also another reason is he went to China, the first Chinese monk he met was Tenzo, and he was a very impressive conversation, and he said almost a shameful experience for him. That was when he was 23 years old. So he found, you know, the practice as a Tenzo in the kitchen is a really important practice. Not to support the practice of, you know, studying Dharma and practice Zazen, but working in the kitchen itself is important practice, essential practice. So Tenzo Kyokun is one of the early writings of Dogen. Before Tenzo Kyokun, he wrote 1227, he wrote, right after, this is the year he came back from China, he wrote Fukan Zazengi. This is a manual of Zazen practice. And second writing of Dogen is written in 31. Bendowa. That is the fact we are going to study during coming Genzo-e. Wrote a collection of short essays and entitled Gakudo Yojin Shu. English translation is points to watch in practicing the way. This is a part of Dogen Zen book. Yojin means how to use our mind, how to watch, what we need to watch when we practice the Buddha way. So this is a kind of instruction to the beginners. I think many people came to practice with Dogen, so he gave those instructions, what kind of attitude they should keep in mind while they practice with Dogen. And next one is this Tenzo Kyokun. So this was written when he was when he focused his time and energy on establishing his own monastery or sangha, and all those early writings was instruction to the people who were aspired to practice with Dogen. And from the next year, that is 1238, he started to write other chapters of Shobo Genzo. In this year, he wrote Ikka no Myoju, or One Bright Pearl, or Jewel. After that, he started to write many chapters of Shobo Genzo. But until this year, besides these two, Genjo Koa and Makahani Haramitsu, he didn't write any chapters of Shobu Genzo, but I think he was focusing on, how can I say, make the foundation of monastic practice. And I think Tenzo Kyokun was really important for Dogen as a part of monastic practice. That is about the very brief introduction of Tenzo Kyokun. Well, we have 5 more minutes. Do you have any questions? I don't think we have time to start to talk on the text itself. Please.
I have one question about Bomokyo. Was that written in India or China?
Good question. Many scholars think it was made in China. You know, in the Bomokyo, it was one important word as almost a key word of this Bodhisattva precept, and that is what is that? Yeah, yes, and that is not a virtue of Indian Buddhism. It's a virtue of Chinese society. Kōjūnshin, or the, what is the word? Pietal, filial piety. Yeah.
What's going on here? You use the term, but I don't know what it's the wrong answer. So. Yeah. Indra speaks the Brahmanet Sutra, was it something like that?
What is the English translation? I forget.
What's the Brahmanet Sutra?
Brahmanet Sutra is a common name, common word we use to call this sutra. And Japanese pronunciation is Bommokyo, the Sutra of Indra's Net. And this is a sutra, the 10 major precepts and 48 minor precepts are mentioned. Yeah, the word that I mentioned is Kōjūnshin. Kōjūn. Kō is filial piety, and jūn is to obey or follow. And, when Buddhism was introduced to China, one of the obstacles for Chinese people to accept Buddhism is Buddhism negates the value of family system. And that is a very foundation of Chinese morality or ethics. So Chinese people had a very difficult time to accept Buddhism, at least at this point. And it seems to me that this, they put this filial piety, the concept of filial purity, as a basis of this Bodhisattva precept to make Buddhism more kind of acceptable, easy to access for many of Chinese people. So that means Buddhism doesn't negate the value of family. Please.
I was thinking about the Hyakujō Shinji.
Shingi.
Shingi. Modern scholars doubting that it existed. And the content of it sounding like the kind of romantic image of...
Yes, that is what modern scholars think. Yeah.
So I would... John McRae's influence. so I was wondering what you think. about whether this was real or whether this was created later?
I'm not sure. But I'm sure Dogen thinks this is real. This was real. Because when I was a student, that was a time, you know, modern scholars started to doubt about, you know, this historical or traditional view. So I was influenced by that, and I liked it. Because I was a skeptical person, I wanted to doubt everything. So I liked that kind of study. So I don't think, you know, such, you know, text named Hyakujou Shingi existed. And this is, as John McRae wrote in that book, this is a kind of image of a golden age of Zen made up in the Song Dynasty as a history. But when we study Dogen, I think that was the image Dogen had. Mm-hmm. And what we have to do when we study Dogen and when we try to practice following Dogen's teaching, what I should do, what we should do, is at one point we need to think. We want to, you know, transform our view, or depending upon the modern scholarship, or continue Dogen's teaching, whether it's still meaningful or significant in our practice in this, 21st century. That is, koan we have to, you know, struggle with. So we are in a very interesting and important point, especially, you know, in the history or within the time and also within the space, you know, Chinese, Indian, Chinese, Japanese, or other British countries and American or European Western countries, what change should be made and what should be, you know, maintained. It's really an important question. Please.
How about the other Japanese Zen schools? Do they have a Shingi from China directly, or?
Well, there are three schools of Zen in Japan. One is Soto, second is Rinzai, and third is Obaku. And Obaku and Rinzai are not so different. Obaku is a part of Rinzai tradition. And they have their own Shingi. And even in Soto school, not only Ehe Shingi, there are several other Shingis. Second Shingi in Soto tradition is Keizan Shingi, made by Keizan Jokin. And there are several others made after 17th century. And modern Japanese Soto monastic practice is based on those Shingis made in Edo period. Of course, Dogen's Shingi is always studied. I forget to talk about the unique point of Dogen's Shingi. This Shingi is six independent writings, and his Shingi is not really a collection of regulations, but he, you know, try to express the very essential and juicy meaning of monastic practice. In the case of Tenzo Kyokun, how to practice in the kitchen. If you read other shingi or regulation like this, you can see, you know, this is like a collection of regulations, rules. That is the difference. So Dogen Zenshingi is always have been studied, but monastic practice cannot be carried out only based on this Zenshingi. I think that's why Keizan made his own Zenshingi. Okay, please.
Following my previous question,
mm-hmm.
I'm thinking that Dogen didn't actually try to imitate those earlier masters, although he believed that was the way his expression was sort of his expression. Would that be correct?
Where he thought his teaching or his understanding has been correctly transmitted from Shakyamuni through, you know, many generations. So I think he himself believed this is what Buddha taught, and this is a essential or core of Buddhist and Zen masters' teachings. And he thought that Zen teaching or Zen teaching in Song Dynasty had lost that essence. So he wanted to return to the origin. So I think within himself he believed that what he's teaching is accordance with a kind of a teaching in the golden age of Zen, or even older from Buddha.
Okay. I was thinking, you know, not about the teaching, but about the form, you know, about the Shingi, the style of practice, or the style of the master.
Well, for example, how he described how to use Oryoki, that was almost exactly the same as what is, you know, described in this Shingi. And he quote Zen Shingi in many places in Heishingi. So I don't think he wanted to create his own version that is different from the tradition.
Right. He was pretty close to the Zenin Shingi. He didn't try to go back to the Hyakujo Shingi.
Because it didn't exist.
Right. Even though he thought it did. Yeah. He stayed with his own time.
But, you know, there are very short writings of Dogen in which he wrote the reason why he wrote Fukanza Zenji. Have you read that document?
Yeah,
I made translation, and I think I hand out some time.
Is it in Carol's book?
But in that writing, if he mentioned why the reason why he wrote Fukanza Zenji, he said there is a Zazengi as a part of this book, this regulation, the instruction how to sit. But Dogen said this person who made this Shingi, Choro Sosaku, added his personal view. That's why it's different from Hyakujo's teaching. So what he said, I'm writing this Fukanza Zenji in order to return to the original teaching of Hyakujo. So from this writing, it's very clear that Dogen believed Hyakujo made the Shingi, original Shingi, and he trying to return to that original spirit.
Thank you
very much.